I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Hello, this is Mike Swanson, and in a few moments, you're going to listen to another segment of Parallax Views. But before you do that, let me tell you about my new book, Why the Vietnam War. It's a sequel to my previous book called The War State, which has lots of positive reviews and Amazon's been out for years. But this one is a more detailed case study of how American empire, national security state operate using Vietnam. And I believe it shows also how things work today, how policy is actually made and why. So grab the book on Amazon.com, Why the Vietnam War.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, a little bit of a change of pace. We've got a special guest from the world of metal and rock and roll, none other than Mike Nine Williams, of such bands as Corrections House, Arson Anthem, and perhaps most famously or infamously, I Hate God. That last band is considered one of the pioneers of the Nola metal and sludge metal scenes. And Mike is the band's vocalist, belting out dark and cryptic lyrics to accompany the noisy jams I Hate God has been producing since 1988. The band has just come out with a new album entitled A History of Nomadic Behavior. Mike joins us on this edition of the show to discuss not only his music, but also his poetry and thoughts on politics, transgressive art, and Black Lives Matter, among other things. So, without further ado, let's get right to it with Mike Nine Williams of I Hate God. Welcome to Parallax Views, a guest I've been wanting to have on for a long while now, Mike Nine Williams of I Hate God, and also a band that I'm really fond of that I think needs to be talked about more, Corrections House. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing fine. And so, you? Good?
I am doing really good, and I'm really happy we could get this together with help from my friend Shane Bugby. And
Yep.
I was curious, maybe to start, you got into the punk scene back in what, like 78 maybe, or?
Yeah, 1978.
What was that experience like, the whole punk scene back then? Because I've had a few punk rockers on that say, you know, the scene was very different than what kids may think of today when they get involved in scenes.
I mean, it's totally different now. It's I'm glad people are still doing it, you know, but back then it was a brand new thing, you know, and especially in America. I mean, you know, it had been going, I guess, a couple of years over in the UK. And of course, you know, the CBGB scene before that with television and Talking Heads and Dead Boys and those bands. But I mean, I was a little kid, you know, so, you know, the people I was living with, my guardians weren't so happy with me wanting to look like that or the stuff I was listening to. But they gradually came around to it and understood what it was about. I guess there was just so much electricity in the air back then for that type of thing. You know, it was brand new, like I said, and it was just breaking new ground, you know.
What sort of drew you to it? Was it just the aesthetic? Was it the energy?
All of that, everything. I mean, you know, being an outcast myself my whole life, that was one of the main things. It was mostly people like me, people who, you know, were loners in school, didn't have many friends in school or friends at all, for that matter. It was exciting, you know, it was just something about it. I mean, I was into bands before that. I was into The Who, Alice Cooper, Black Sabbath, you know, stuff like that. Kiss, I was a big Kiss fan in the early 70s, well, mid 70s. So it was just kind of a continuation of that rock and roll energy for me. And I don't know, it just took it to another level and it seemed more specific to my way of thinking. You know, it was anti everything basically that I opposed to, even at that young of an age. I mean, I was a child then, but there wasn't a lot of people my age getting into it then. People were a lot older, or at least, you know, they seemed older. It was probably only, you know, 5 years or so, but, you know, it was more of that thing. So I don't know, man. I just, it just drew me in, and I never looked back from that day.
I was going to add, too, it's always interesting when I talk to certain musicians who are involved in the punk scene. I had Vag Moore on from the Dwarves a while back, and he was saying, you know, back then, if you were a punk kid, you'd be picked on by the jocks. They would, you know, call you names and whatnot. It wasn't easy being a punk.
Well, yeah, I mean, that all definitely is true. You definitely got, you know, the cars riding by with either everybody hated you. You know, if you looked like a punk, nobody was fond of what you were doing at all. It was weird to people then. Now it's accepted. So it's a lot different now. It's more, I mean, you see people in ads with green hair and tattoos and things, and it's like a, you know, it's a thing now. It's a fashion. It became a fashion. I mean, it was a fashion then, but now it's a commodity, you know? So, but yeah, I mean, the cars would ride by with the rednecks or the jocks, you know, and throw shit at you and yell Devo, you know, Devo, fuck you. And, you know, or they would chase you, you would get beat up, you know, I mean, things like that, you know, and the metal kids and like, well, there wasn't really much of a metal scene or anything, but like long haired kids would get beat up at shows. I mean, it was a lot different than it is nowadays.
So what was your experience like growing up, and did it influence any of your, I hope that's not too personal of a question, but did it influence any of your lyrics and just how you were drawn into bands like I Hate God?
Well, I mean, my lyrics have always about being an outcast and being in a, you know, desperation of life kind of thing. You know, I mean, I've always liked that type of lyric about addiction and love and hate and all the things of being a human, you know? So, yeah, I guess that stuff influenced me, you know, for sure. You know, certain bands like Black Flag, you know, like their early stuff, pre-Rollins. I mean, Rollins was okay, but I liked them better before that. Those lyrics to me were more personal. You know, they weren't singing about anarchy in the UK or, you know, that type of thing. It was more about their feelings and how they felt and just relating to people. And you can't relate to girls. You can't relate to anybody in your school. You know, these type of things, you know, that every teenager has. But punk was just a way for me to, like, show that I was pissed about it. And it was rebellion, you know, and it just fit my whole personality in life.
You know, it's interesting. One thing I wanted to pick your brain about, I don't know that you would consider, I don't know if you agree with this label, but I think some people would say I Hate God, Corrections House, they deal with sort of transgressive aesthetics. It's interesting now because there's a big debate around transgressive sort of art, because you have things like the alt-right and these sort of Breitbart-style right-wing shock artists now. What do you make of that sort of development in our sort of society and the media?
Well, I mean, definitely transgressive stuff. I've always been into transgressive film and art and anything like that. You know, the stuff back in the 80s, 90s. All that stuff is great to me, you know, but now like people, I guess you're trying to, or what you're saying is, like what I'm getting from it is like how these people now are like, I've heard people say that being into Trump is punk rock because it's against the norm of kind of what most sane people, you know, don't. Trump's an asshole, you know, I think he's an asshole. So yeah, I think that's the craziest fucking thing I've ever heard, because Trump is how it's not that way. Being into Trump is not transgressive at all, you know? So I don't understand it really. There's a lot of it I just don't understand. I mean, I guess they're trying to be contrarian and be the opposite of what people are into, which was kind of a little bit of what the original punk was about, but not really, you know. It wasn't just about hating everything. It was about hating authority and being pissed of being told what to do in these, you know, and cops and things like that. So yeah, I quite don't understand that that ideal to be into Trump because of that. If that's what you were saying.
No, that's definitely part of what I was saying. And I was also thinking of, you know, I think Steve Albini just gave an interview where he said, you know, he was frustrated with people who sort of think they're transgressive, but are just out to like hurt people's feelings or just to do damage to society sort of right wing way. And I feel like your work with I Hate God, with your poetry, Cancer as a Social Activity, it's never been about, you know, spouting right wing BS or, you know, it's not necessarily out to hurt people, I think.
No. Not at all. I mean, in the early days when we first started, I mean, I was into punk early, you know, so it comes from that, like, there was that whole Sid Vicious thing with the swastika, you know, pissing people off type of thing. But we realize now, and we realized it then, it was stupid, but it got people's attention, you know, and it got a negative reaction from people. That's what people wanted, you know. But times have changed, you know, these are different times, you know. I Hate God, in the beginning, we were trying to shock people and trying to be, you know, that type of band, you know, with song titles, or if it's, you know, starting fights at shows or, you know, breaking bottles in my head or, you know, things like that. But, you know, that soon went away after a while, you know. Sometime in the mid-90s, I guess, that kind of just... it became kind of cliched to me, and I didn't want to do that anymore. You know, I still like when people get a reaction. I love to get a reaction from people still, but it's more of a, I don't want to say professional, because that's definitely not what's going on here, but it's more of a, you know, just, God, what word do I use? Just, we've evolved, I guess, you know, from that type of thing. But I mean, did anything racist or anything that horrible, you know, to be that shocking. You know,
I always felt like, not to interrupt you, I always felt like some of those early I Hate God albums with, you know, controversial song titles, they were sort of like trying to put the reflecting mirror up and say, this is what, you know, this horrible society is like right now.
Well, for sure. I mean, we had a song called White with the N-word. That was in no way to be racist or anything at all. You know, people figured, oh, they're from the South. They're using that word that way. But I mean, it has the word white in front of it. We were saying that we relate to people that are downtrodden or put in this, you know, or kept to the side or kept down. You know, that's the way I was looking at it. There's anarchist bands that have, Crass has used that word the same way. You know, it was like saying that we are beat down like other people, other different, you know, cultures. So I was saying it like that, you know.
Yeah, and I even think we saw it a little bit of commentary on, you know, race relations when it came to Corrections House. You have that line in, I think it's Last City Zero, you know, race relations is like a helicopter crash in the Everglades. And it's not saying that that's a good thing. In fact, I think you're sort of lamenting that it's, you know, deteriorated so much and there's so much racism in our society.
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. It's something that we can't really control as much as we want to. I mean, we can be as anti-racist as possible, but there's still... it's going to be there, it seems. You know, this has been going on for hundreds and I don't even know how many years, but it's been going on forever. So, yeah, I mean, it is a helicopter crash. You know, it's just crazy. But, yeah.
So I last political thing, and then we'll move into the more personal elements.
All right.
What were your thoughts on the Black Lives Matter protests over the summer? Because I know you were pretty supportive of it, and I think there's a lot to be said for it.
I mean, I was fully supportive of it. I still am, you know. I mean, people that have been treated like shit for hundreds and hundreds of years, I mean, they need to have a voice, you know. I mean, you can't get through to some people because they're just stubborn and hard-headed. They're not going to listen because they believe white people should be controlling everything or whatever. But I'm glad all that happened, you know. I think it should still be happening. They should still be protesting. You know, they are, but there's not, you know, the public, you know, burning down police stations is not happening right now, but it should be. It should be, you know. I just, I fully support all that.
I always like the line that Ice-T had with, he did a body count track a few years ago, where he's like, you know, the bottom line is like, this is a war. You know, the cops aren't here for us, and they're not here for, you know, the black community, and they're not there for poor whites either. And I feel like, you know, we're really at this moment where there's so much division, and I almost feel like we're being divided on purpose at times, not to sound like a paranoid.
No, I get it. I know. I don't believe in all that conspiracy stuff, but I mean, sometimes it seems like that, you know. I mean, if they keep us fighting, then they're out of the picture. So when white people join black people and protest all this horrible shit that's going on, they get scared, you know. They get really scared. So I'm just hope it continues.
So in regards to the lyrics that you've done for I Hate God, for Corrections House, and also in your poetry, how would you sort of define your sort of lyrical and writing style? Because I know people will say, oh, it's misanthropic, it's nihilistic. How would you define it, though?
I just call it, like, personal stuff. But there's also some, like, hallucinogenic, like, LSD experience type stuff thrown in, like some stuff that just makes no sense, more of maybe like a Dada kind of abstract art type of thing, which I'm fully into as well, like that type of thing. I like to confuse people. I like contradictions, you know. I like making no sense sometimes, because I once again, I guess I like to see the reaction of people that don't understand things. But I don't know. They're just mostly personal lyrics, you know, about experiences I've had or just things that I'm thinking or thought of.
What for you is one of the more personal songs within any of the bands that you've been involved with, whether it's I Hate God or Corrections House? What's a song that stands out for you that you were really sort of using it almost to express certain personal feelings? You know, it's almost like therapy in some ways.
I don't know if there's one in particular, because it's all kind of cryptic, except for I only know what I mean, you know. So, I mean, the lyrics change as well sometimes. I'm trying to not do that much, but in the past I was too drunk to remember any of the lyrics, so they would change a lot. But I don't think there's a particular song that's like super personal to me. We're not writing like ballads or, you know, things like that.
Was there any element of I Hate God so far since you've been involved with the band, you know, going back from the very beginning, that, you know, you're especially fond of memory wise?
I mean, all of it, really. I mean, we've had ups and downs in this band, you know. There's been a lot of good stuff and a lot of bad stuff. We've had lots of fun. I mean, traveling has been the best thing ever, you know. And but then there's been a lot of horrible things as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask in that regard about Hurricane Katrina. I don't know if you are willing to talk a little bit about the experience of being in New Orleans when that happened.
Yeah. I mean, basically, I was in New Orleans when Hurricane Katrina happened, you know. I didn't have any money to leave the city. I didn't have a car. I wasn't going to go to the Superdome because it was a nightmare there, you know, So, I mean, there's a whole thing with me, robbing a pharmacy and all this stuff, you know, so I could get, you know, super detailed about it. I don't even remember all of it, but I don't even want to talk about it, really. It's too much to talk about.
That's fair. That's fair. What was your main takeaway, though?
It could be like three chapters in a book. That's,
you'll have to write a memoir about it.
I want to. I'm just lazy.
At the very least, did Katrina maybe impact the way you thought about things, about the world around you, about your approach to music? What was its impact on you personally?
I mean, yeah, it makes stuff like that makes you not take things for granted as much, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, more so that did that to me was the surgery that I had when I almost died like 4 years ago.
The liver, yeah.
Yeah. But Hurricane Katrina was definitely eye-opening, you know. I mean, there's just everything about it, you know.
In regards to the surgery, what effect did that have maybe on your perspective on things?
I mean, it just kind of taught me that that I kind of like to be alive, you know. I kind of enjoy life. In the 90s, I was suicidal most of the time. Really didn't care what was going to happen, you know. I mean, I know there's stories and rumors out there and stuff, but that, I mean, that's true though. I really didn't care like what happened to me. And so almost actually dying from something that, you know, it wasn't on my terms. This wasn't, you know, I mean, I knew drinking my whole life and using drugs my whole life would eventually get me in trouble somehow. But, the way it happened, you know, I just wasn't ready to go yet when that happened. So I just, I don't know. It just changed my whole outlook on being on this earth. You know, there's so much to do. There's so many things I need to see. And there's also all my friends and family too. I just, you know, they didn't want me to go. So that was, that's a great thing. And so I just wasn't ready to die, I guess. So now I appreciate things a little bit more, you know.
So it was a bit life affirming in an odd way.
Yeah.
And I guess that leads me into something I think is interesting about your work. I know I mentioned earlier that some people will say that your lyrics may come off as misanthropic, but I think there's a lot of empathy in your writing. I think you've even said before in other interviews, you have too much empathy at times. So you feel like it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sometimes I get mad that I have so much empathy because I'm like, damn it. I'm worried about this thing, but I shouldn't be because, you know, I don't know, but I mean, it's always good to have empathy either way. I'm kind of joking when I said that, you know, but, yeah, I mean, it's something I can't help. I can't help being emphatic about certain subjects, you know? You care about things. And in the 90s, I cared about things, but not so much about myself. You know, I didn't really care about myself at all. I still cared about people and things, you know, situations or whatever, but not myself. So I think I've gotten to now where I can be empathetic about, you know, everything that I naturally would be.
Yeah, and I also think what's interesting for me about I Hate God is, you know, I think I told you in our first email correspondence that it was one of those bands that really got me through some very tough times, you know, through some very dark places. And I think you said that you've actually heard that quite a bit. Maybe you could comment on that, how this music has affected people in ways that maybe you didn't think would necessarily take shape.
I think people relate to it somehow. I think, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but, you know, I guess people can feel my pain sometimes, you know, and so they relate to it. And it's like with me, like meeting someone that's been through the same thing in person, you know there's someone else out there, you know, with the same problems and the same things are going on, you know. I've had a lot of people tell me that I Hate God's got them through things. Like if it was either a breakup or something, or they were suicidal and they listened and they could relate to it and understand what I was feeling, you know. that's been a really cool thing with the band, you know. I never expected that to happen back when we first started. We were just, you know, breaking bottles and things and making noise. I didn't think, you know, someday people would be like, well, you saved my life. It's pretty strange.
Yeah, I think it's very telling because I think it shows that, you know, music can be a very therapeutic outlet, not only for the listener, but also for the musician.
Yeah, for sure. It's cathartic, you know, the whole thing. And I guess listening to it, I mean, I listen to bands or, you know, or music in general that it's cathartic. It makes you feel a certain way. It empowers you and makes you feel better about, you know, whatever's going on. So, yeah, I mean, I get it, you know, I understand it.
So in regards to your poetry, which I really want to read, but I know getting a copy of Cancer as a Social Activity, it's a bit costly, I think, right now because it's been out of print. But what was your interest in poetry even before you wrote the book?
I don't really know how I got into that. You know, I mean, I always liked to write when I was a kid. You know, I always read books and wrote stuff, whether it was, I don't even know, stories or something when I was younger, you know. And somehow, I guess I found out, you know, about these other writers like Bukowski and William Burroughs and William Volman and different people that were interesting. You know, it wasn't just like Bukowski showed me that you don't have to just write about, you know, poetry's not about like flowers and trees like Walt Whitman or something, you know. I mean, Walt Whitman's great, though. Don't get me wrong. But I just realized that I could write about anything, you know, personal experiences or just things that I see around me. So that's what got me into him specifically. But just poetry in general, I guess, I don't know, it just attracted me because it's so easy, really. But I don't know if I'm any good at it, but I mean, it's just another outlet, you know, to get things out. And, you know, I've always done art, you know. As a kid, I took art classes and went to art school and all that stuff. So it's just another way to do art for me, you know?
I was going to say too, since you mentioned Bukowski, I'm also a big fan of Bukowski. And I think it's interesting because so many people just think that, you know, if you read Bukowski, you must be one of those like aggro macho guys or whatever. And I'm like, I think that's the opposite of what I get out of Bukowski. There's a lot of like really sad, tender moments in his writing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's not like, I mean, he writes about things that a normal man would go through, you know, relationships and work and drinking and things like that. But yeah, he has some really sensitive moments, you know, a lot of them where he's reflecting on life in general, you know. You know, I just think that, I don't know, that kind of goes back to like the way the Black Flag lyrics, like this, that same like introspection or, you know, just thinking about the way things are.
Yeah. And for me, that's another interesting aspect of all the various bands you've been involved with, because, you know, growing up, I was not into like the sort of macho cock rock aesthetic. And I feel like I never got that out of bands like I Hate God. There wasn't like this necessarily a macho posturing around that.
No, not at all. I mean, not anything on purpose, of course. You know, we just have always prided I Hate God as just being ourselves, you know, nothing more than just being us, you know. And there's definitely none of that involved. I've always been anti-rock star. I mean, I do like some bands that have that aspect to them, you know, Motley Crue or somebody, you know. I mean, I like that old stuff, you know. First two albums, you know, they're pretty good. But I mean, not with this band, you know, or any other band I've been in, you know. It's always been that anti-rock star thing where we hang out with people and we don't make ourselves like, you know, hide ourselves or, you know, in the dressing room or anything like that, you know. We always talk to people and answer questions and drink with people and all that. So yeah, there's never been any kind of posturing or anything like that.
I guess what I'm getting at is, in some ways, and this may sound strange, but I think there's a lot of sensitivity in Corrections House and in I Hate God, some of the lyrics, you know, they really evoke feelings that aren't just making me want to headbang.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that probably comes from the punk side, you know, of this whole thing. Especially with Corrections House, you know, there's some of the stuff I used for Corrections House was in my book. And some of the I Hate God stuff is in my book, too. But the stuff I used for Corrections House is a little more maybe, I hate to say sensitive, but maybe it is, you know, maybe a little deeper, some of it, you know.
Yeah, I really liked what you did with Corrections House, and I was curious as to how it came about. Was it influenced maybe by things like Katrina and the aftermath of that, or what sort of got you to do that? And maybe it's very different than I Hate God.
Well, my book was written before Katrina, except the second edition has like some stuff I wrote after, like 5 or 6 poems in it. But anyway, that has nothing to do with it, really, just the lyrics. Excuse me. Well, Corrections House is, you know, I'm from New Orleans, but, you know, Scott Kelly from Neurosis, he's from Oakland and then Oregon. The other two guys in Corrections House are from Chicago. So it's, you know, it's not anything about Katrina at all. It's about everybody's collective, you know, thoughts, basically. I don't know. That came about in a really strange way. We just all knew each other separately. You know, like I knew Scott from way back in the 80s. I knew Bruce and Sanford in a different way from later on from doing just around. You know, I knew Sanford from bands, basically, other bands. then Scott knew those two guys, you know, and they knew, you know, so it was like that type of thing. So we just decided, like, let's do some kind of band. We were just going to do, it wasn't even going to be a band, actually. I'll take that back. In the beginning, it was just going to be 4 separate sets. Like, I was going to do spoken word. Bruce was going to do he does saxophone stuff, like treated saxophone with the effects and things like that. And he was going to do that as like a set, you know, just like the avant-garde kind of saxophone thing. And Sanford was going to do something with, you know, synths and all that, whatever he was going to do, beats, you know, drum beats. And Scott was going to do, he had already been doing like solo sets on the acoustic, you know? And, so we were just going to go out and do that. And at the end, we were going to try to come together and just do like an improv, like noise, like experimental thing at the end to end the whole thing, you know? So as we kept, you know, evolving and actually on the first day of that, we did a US tour and we had no idea what we were going to do. We had no set. We had nothing. We had kind of done this thing at the end that Sanford had written. And I don't even remember when the lyrics got put to that, but we kind of just went and did that. But then it started like melding together. Then Scott would come out behind me and play acoustic and then go into his set. Sanford was in the back doing the beats and the synths and all that. And we started kind of playing during each other's parts. And then we had like these songs at the end. We were kind of working out as we went on the tour. So like by the end of that tour, we had those songs. And the next tour, we had like 8 songs or 9 songs, you know, together. So that's kind of how it all came together. And we recorded, you know.
It sounds like it was like very spontaneous in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think spontaneity in the arts is something we need a lot more of.
It was totally spontaneous. I mean, like I said, the first day of the tour, we all met in Brooklyn. We had no idea what we were going to do. We just knew we were going to do the solo sets and then make noise at the end. But then it gradually ended up. Now we have 2 albums out with full songs on them. And a 7-inch out as well. So we just, you know, that's what we ended up doing. So it was totally spontaneous. It just evolved as we went along, you know, which is pretty cool if you think about it. Nothing was like preconceived except the 4 people. And that was really it, you know.
I was going to add to that. Do you ever have sort of spontaneous moments in live settings as opposed to maybe studio settings. Like, I'm always interested in how musicians feel about the difference between the live set and studio recording.
Oh, well, it's totally different with Corrections House and I Hate God. Corrections House, there was definitely not a lot of spontaneous stuff, because once we had the drum machine programmed, we had to stick to that drum machine. We had this one really fast song called Bullets and Graves. It's kind of a Ministry, I guess that's what most people would say that don't know any other music. They would compare it to like Ministry or something. So it's pretty fast, but it's got a drum machine. Yeah, I would fuck up that song almost every night. And if you get off the beat with that one, you're screwed, you know? So there was not a lot of improv with that. Maybe during each of our sets. Well, I mean, with each of our solo kind of things, we would, like, whoever was the front person at that time, I would read different things every night. I would choose different things to read out of the book or other writings I did. So there was that kind of improv stuff. With I Hate God, sometimes we don't ever make a set list with I Hate God. We just go out there and we start with usually the same four songs or one song we pick to be first. And then we kind of just look at each other in between the songs just to see what we're going to play next. So I guess that's improv in a way, you know.
What's it like feeding maybe off the energy of the crowd for a live I Hate God show?
I mean, I honestly need it 100%, you know. I don't need it to do a show in general, but you know, I mean, I need people to be, you know, if the crowd's just standing there bored, I can still play a show and do exactly what we always do. But when they're into it and everybody's drunk and, you know, throwing beers around or whatever, I can get more into it to where it becomes like trance-like almost, you know, it's like that muscle memory thing, but you just like, you're seeing these people go insane and it really just adds to it for me, you know. I prefer those type of wild shows like that. So the energy from the crowd it's important to me.
Yeah, it's interesting too with regards to Corrections House. It's very different in some ways than I Hate God, in that it's, you know, a lot of people think of it in terms of being more along the lines of like industrial sort of rock or industrial metal, like Skinny Puppy, Ministry, Godflesh. Yeah. What's interesting to me is it seems like when it comes to music, for me, I don't like all the labels. You know, I get that people want to put things into boxes like sludge metal, yeah, industrial metal. What do you make of that sort of labeling process that people have with music?
Well, we're the same then, because I can't stand all those things. I mean, especially nowadays when everything's in a subgenre and then that's in another subgenre, I think it's kind of silly. I hate, and I've said it in many interviews since probably the 2000s, I hate the term sludge metal. You know, I just don't like it. I never considered us a metal band anyway, because we don't fit in with that, like you mentioned earlier, that the posturing macho kind of thing, you know. We don't fit in with metal in that way, you know. I just thought we were a weird punk band. That's what I always thought, a slow, weird, slow punk band. But, you know, somebody came up with the sludge thing and now it's like stuck, you know, and the metal, sludge metal, you know. So I don't know. It's just one of those things. I think I used to do I used to work for a magazine called Metal Maniacs.
Yeah. Yeah. You were the editing.
I was the associate editor for, yeah, I think one issue, but I worked on like five or six issues, you know, writing and doing stuff like that. Interviews, whatever, reviews. If you work in like music journalism, you have to usually come up with some sort of term like that. You know, I don't think I ever came up with anything that wasn't already invented. You know, I mean, when you say punk, I mean, that's a label, but it encompasses so much, you know.
I always loved punk, not to interrupt you, but I always loved what Jello Biafra said about the Dead Kennedys. He said, if the Dead Kennedys were around today, people would say, oh, it's too surf rock. to be considered punk. I mean, that's how ridiculous things have gotten with these labels.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, I mean, it is silly. You know, I mean, punk was an attitude to begin with. I mean, all the old bands, I mean, especially like the CBGB's thing, it was all, you know, television doesn't sound like the Dead Boys. The Dead Boys don't sound like Patti Smith or you know, the Talking Heads, you know. So all that was just, I don't think anybody in that scene really called it punk, but the, you know, journalists were calling it that. But it was just one big scene and one big kind of do-it-yourself attitude, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say it is more like an attitude because, I mean, I look at a band like Dead Kennedys and they're completely different from a band like, you know, Poison Idea, which I'm a huge Poison Idea fan, and I was glad to find out you are as well.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, I did a record called Dead End America, a band with the Slayer hippie, Steve Hanford, who passed away. He passed away a year ago now. I can't believe it's been a year. But I've always loved Poison Idea, and being friends with Steve was great, man. I actually saw their last show in Brooklyn last year before all this pandemic stuff happened.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Poison Idea's very last show. I don't know if it will be, but, you know, they said it was.
In regards to...
About labels, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I guess if you're a journalist, sometimes you have to come up with things to describe music. So I guess that's... I can't knock them for trying, I guess, for coming up with sludge punk or sludge metal or whatever. But I just think it's kind of silly. I just say we're just a rock and roll band. That's, I mean, if you really boil it down, that's all it is, you know, just intense, like aggressive rock and roll.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. Do you think in some ways that maybe the music journalism scene has, is there anything that needs to be demythologized about, you know, the NOLA metal scene in the same way that I think NOLA metal has become, you know, the new grunge in some ways. There's a lot of mythologization about it.
I don't know what the myths are, to be honest. I mean, I'm in the middle of it, so I don't really know what people are saying about it. You know, what are some of the myths?
I guess I just more meant that it seems like it's almost like, oh, this is like NOLA influenced in the same way that now people say, oh, that's grunge influenced.
And yeah.
I kind of get.
I think that was bound to happen eventually.
That's true.
Kind of cool in the way. I mean, I kind of like it a little bit because it kind of means that our scene is being recognized, you know. So right. At least people know a sound is like a New Orleans sound, you know. I kind of always wanted that, though. I wanted people to, you know, like.
No, that is cool because it's like there's the Seattle sound and there's also, yeah, I didn't think of it that way. There's the Seattle sound, there's the New Orleans. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wanted that to happen, but I know what you mean, though. People just, and then once again, it starts getting like generic and people start coming out and thinking that they have to have a down riff and then an I Hate God riff and then a Crowbar riff and all, you know, all their songs. And that's, I just think bands should be original. You know, I just want people to be creative and be original because that's what we did. That's what all the bands in New Orleans did. I mean, we don't sound like Crowbar. We don't sound like Down. You know, none of these bands sound alike when you break it down. So I don't know. I just think people should be more original and not say, we're going to start this band. It's going to sound just like I Hate God. You know, that's right. It's impressive and it's flattering, but I don't think they should do that.
There's just a few more things I wanted to touch on before we close out. The first is, since you were mentioning bands that influenced you, like Black Flag, are there any other bands that had an influence? I've always wondered if, there was any Swans influence on some of I Hate God's material.
Definitely, for sure. We don't sound like Swans, but that slow sound on the first album, the Cop album, and then they had the Raping a Slave 12-inch, those two things I played nonstop, you know, even back in the 80s, before I Hate God, I was into that stuff. I mean, for me, everybody in the band's got different tastes. That's a cool thing about this band, is like not everybody agrees on what's the best thing, you know? So it adds a lot of outside influence that doesn't, just come from like metal or punk, you know? But like Jimmy listens to country music. That's his thing. You know, he likes it, and that's cool. I think it's cool. He brings that to the band, you know? I forgot your question, though.
I was just asking about other influences. I'm glad you mentioned the country thing, because I've always thought it was cool that, you know, people like Hank III have been, you know, sort of crossing the line between country and metal. And I feel like we need more of this sort of experimentation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the first time I met Hank Shelton, Hank III, he was wearing a Black Flag shirt, and I saw him on TV or something, and I'm like, "That's Hank Senior's grandson, and he's wearing a Black Flag shirt. I got to meet this guy," you know. And we ended up being great friends, you know, later on. But yeah, man, I'm influenced by so much. I mean, I listen to so much stuff from. I mean, none of this goes into the band, but I like, you know, dub reggae. I love a lot of hip hop. I like blues. I mean, there's a lot of jazz stuff I like Charlie Harper and Thelonious Monk, stuff like that. I like experimental stuff, noise, or like just whatever, you know. But then, I mean, I mostly listen to old punk stuff, you know. If there are, I like some new bands as well, punk bands. But I'll listen to anything as long as it's good, you know. I mean, it doesn't matter to me, you know. But as far as I Hate God goes, the original stuff was like Black Flag, St. Vitus, Trouble, Confessor, Celtic Frost, Carnivore, and then like Blast, Black Flag, and stuff like that. Bad Brain, Circle Jerks, you know.
I think it's interesting, too. I think a lot of people underestimate the blues influence a lot of times in metal and just rock and roll more generally. I mean, anyone who's familiar with it knows, you know, Led Zeppelin, it's basically, you know, taking the blues tradition.
Yeah, I mean, some of those songs are ripped off straight up on their first album. They're just played a little different with electric guitars, you know. I mean, we've always represented the blues as much as we can, you know, everywhere we go, you know. We always Lightnin' Hopkins and John Lee Hooker and, you know, all those people, Booker White, Mississippi John Hurt. We always play that stuff in the van and listen to it all the time. When you're from the South, especially in New Orleans, you in walking around the French Quarter, you hear stuff like that coming out of bars or wherever. So it was like a college station that plays blues all day, you know. So this, you know, stuff like that. But we grew up on that.
So before closing out here, I wanted to ask one more thing in terms of the aesthetics of I Hate God that's always interested me. A lot of the bands I'm drawn to sort of have this sort of apocalyptic imagery. I'm into bands like Integrity, Ministry, Godflesh. How did that sort of apocalyptic imagery play into I Hate God? And how did that sort of ferment over the years in maybe the album covers and some of the song titles?
I mean, I don't know. I've just always liked dark things ever since I was a little kid. You know, I've always liked the dark side of things, you know. I had an older brother who, when I was, you know, like 10 years younger than him, he would read, you know, books about the mafia and World War II and, you know, the gangsters of the 40s, you know, Dillinger and, you know, all those guys. And I would read those things and just got really interested in that side of life, you know, crime and things like that. You know, it's just interesting. It's more interesting than most other things to me, but right. I don't know. That's just basically it. I mean, I've always wanted to do album cover art like that, you know. I mean, I did all the first album cover stuff, and then that was a lot of it was influenced by Discharge, like, you know, the pictures cut out and just really stark, you know, black and white covers, like the first album we did. Or this band SPK, who are like one of my favorite bands.
I know SPK, one of the original industrial bands. Yeah
I love that band. I love everything they did, you know. That, you know, if you're an SPK fan, then you can pick out some stuff that I probably stole through the years in some I Hate God stuff, you know, like the, you know, strength through mental illness and stuff like that. We didn't use that exactly, but there's, you know, there's some influence there for me. And our drummer, Joey, who passed away, he was really into SBK and Throbbing Gristle, and Masana, you know, Merzbow, stuff like that, you know. So that's where, kind of where the feedback and the noise comes from. And I Hate God. It was kind of just like in the beginning, the early days, we just wanted to be noisy, slow, and just piss people off. You know, that was our goal then. We never thought we'd be here 30 years later, you know, doing this, like, and actually having like a semi, like, proper band, you know?
Right, right. Well, it's, I mean, I'm actually really glad that I Hate God has lasted so long, that you've, you know, been able to release your poetry, because I think it, like I was trying to say at the beginning of our conversation, I think it really speaks to a certain group of people who, you know, have had hardships, maybe are into the darker things, you know, people like me who read Bukowski and Bataille and things like that. And I think it's really relatable.
Well, we have a song called Story of the Eye.
That's why I mentioned Bataille. Yeah, yeah.
So that was an influence as well. But yeah, I mean, people that are into that type of stuff, and there's a lot of people, you know, that like it. It's not huge, but then, I mean, then we're a good band for them to listen to. And I always like to talk about other bands too, like I did in this interview, to get like some younger people that might hear this and are I Hate God fans. They'll go search out these other bands and books and things too, you know?
No, right on, right on. And I guess the question I want to leave on is, what do you hope that people get out of I Hate God, whether it be the new album or any of the previous albums, or just what do you hope they get out of the experience if they enjoy I Hate God?
We just want people to, I mean, it's kind of, you know, we have all this negative imagery and negative lyrics and things like that, but we just want people to have fun. I mean, since the beginning, we've just wanted to have fun, you know? Go ahead.
I have to mention one thing in that regard, because you just jogged my memory. I used to have a jacket with a back patch, like an I Hate God back patch. And I was walking out of a gas station at one point, and there's this guy in front of me who is also walking out around the same time. And he starts slowing down his walk and looks back at me. And then he's walking out of the gas station, and he keeps walking, and I'm headed back to my apartment, and he keeps slowing down progressively until eventually I catch up with him. And he turns to me and says, "Why are you wearing that? Do you hate God?" And I was just like, dude, it's just a band. And it was so funny what he said to me. "Oh, okay, that's okay. I just worry because, you know, all these kids may be going to an I Hate God concert and saying, I hate God. I hate God."
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, some people are too serious about this stuff and they don't have enough fun.
That's one of my favorite things, is when we play and the whole crowd is chanting, "I hate God," because it's so absurd when you think about it. That, I mean, if somebody, you know, like an evangelist walked in and saw that, they may have a heart attack, you know, just.
Did you ever have trouble with like evangelist types or, you know, Christian proselytizers?
In the beginning, we did. In the beginning, there was a few things, like in Tennessee, there was a we played that night, but it was iffy there for a while because some priest had been calling, or a preacher, I guess, had been calling the club trying to shut it down. There was a protest kind of my other band, but there was an I Hate God flyer used, and it actually made it to the to television. It was on the news. These Christian protested a show by this band Graveyard Rodeo and my other band Crawl Space, but they used an I Hate God flyer in the TV thing, the news report. So that was pretty good. They carried crosses around the venue, and yeah, they were just telling everybody they're going to go to hell.
They're almost as theatrical as the bands themselves in some ways.
Yeah, well, I mean, we loved it. I thought it was great, you know. I thought it was awesome. It was free publicity, you know. If they want to, we're just doing art. We're just playing music, a bunch of kids playing music. If they want to tell us we're devil worshipers, that's funny, you know. It's fun. And it, not so, I guess a couple years ago, there was a senator, Jason Rapert, who tried to shut down our show in Little Rock, Arkansas, because the flyer, he's an anti-abortion guy, he's anti-gay, he's anti-everything, immigrant, you know, he's anti all that. So he's a piece of shit, you know. So he tried to shut down the show because it was a picture of him eating a baby on the flyer. So that was pretty good.
You know, I know I said I just had one more thought that I wanted to share with you. I think I actually may know someone that I think did tattoo art for you. Donovan Stringer?
He wasn't in the band. Okay. I know that name, though, somehow. I don't know why I know that name.
It was interesting because he told me that when it comes to a lot of these different bands, that the way to sum it up with these scenes within metal and punk is that a lot of people have been through the meat grinder, so to speak, and, you know, the music really speaks to that. And I think that, for me, is the bottom line with I Hate God. Yeah. I think it really speaks to people who have felt like they've been through the societal meat grinder.
No, I mean, it's true, you know. I mean, that's what all art is, isn't it? It's just, you know, things that, you know, that you've experienced in life, and it comes out of you in these different ways, whether it's writing or painting or sculpture or music or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a release, and it's just stuff that we like. We want to hear these sounds. We like these sounds, and we like the whole thing.
So if my listeners were interested in maybe your poetry or anything else we talked about, is there any way they can obtain any of that? How can they get a hold of the new album? Just cheap plug time, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about the book earlier, and it's I don't know why it's so expensive on the internet, but I'm about to reprint it, too, with very good specifications that this is not an original book, so nobody can try to sell this one for too much. So I'm going to reprint the book, and if the people just follow my Instagram, you know, I'll post stuff on there about or Facebook, both, you know, Mike Nine Williams on there, or I Hate God's page too, on both of those. So I'll post stuff about when the book's coming out, and I'm going to be selling it then. I should have it on tour next time we go on tour, maybe at the end of this year. So yeah, and the new album, we had some in our store, but I think they're sold out, but people can still try. It's ihategod.ee. That's our website. And there's tons of shirts and stuff on there. Our merch is the one thing that's keeping us afloat right now, so people should check it out. And any band, for that matter, check out all the bands.
Yes, especially now that live touring has been just cut because of COVID.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the one thing that's been keeping us food on the table, you know, keeping food on the table is our merch store. So if people want to check that out, it'd be nice.
Well, I suggest my listeners do that, and I want to thank you again, Mike Nine Williams, for coming on Parallax Use.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Mike Nine Williams of I Hate God. Their new album is available now, entitled A History of Nomadic Behavior. Be sure to check it out. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at parallaxviewspod@protonmail.com. Producers credit shoutouts to Catherine, Nathan, Holland, Mark, Chase, Zach, Omar, Brian, Ted, Gratz, Martin, Gary, Emilia, and Mickey. If you'd like your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views, well, consider joining those listeners in supporting me at the $10 or $15 tiers of my Patreon page at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. There is also a $1 tier and a $5 tier. Any amount will help. Your support is what keeps this show going. So if you appreciate the work I do, $1, $5, $10, $15, doesn't matter. Please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. Again, that's patreon.com parallaxviews. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.